everyone. My name is Elizabeth Manns, and I'd like to welcome you to the April 4th Coalition Show. This is our April 18th edition, and it is week 107 and the 90th show that we've taped since the closure of the North Adams Regional Hospital. The April 4th Coalition's mission statement is, we are for workers' rights and collective bargaining rights, and are against tax breaks for the rich and corporations who ship our jobs overseas. We also support Article 23 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and as is our custom, each of us will take a section.
All right, and I'll go first. Article 23 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, number one, everyone has the right to work, to free choice of employment, to just and favorable conditions of work, and protection against unemployment.
Number two, everyone without any discrimination has the right to equal pay for equal work.
Number three, everyone who works has the right to just and favorable remuneration, ensuring for himself and his family an existence worthy of human dignity and supplemented, if necessary, by other means of social protection.
Number four, everyone has the right to form and join trade unions for the protection of his or her interests.
I don't know how often the audience looks at the montage that we have that starts the show, but you may have noticed there was a history of people being out on strike and protesting over contracts, and history has a tendency to repeat itself, and we have that happening again across the country with Verizon. The Verizon workers are on strike for a better contract and for protection against being sent hundreds of miles away from the family for periods of like 3 months at a time. Dick, did you want to go
well,
further
just,
on that?
Well, you know, I guess I'll talk about an email I got from Jobs with Justice.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, it's addressed to me, Dear Richard, by now you've likely heard that more than 39,000 men and women who work at Verizon are on strike. But I also want you to hear why they're risking their paychecks and jobs. Now, this is a quote from Isaiah Colazio, a Verizon technician. Many people wonder how I can afford to strike. I can't. It's because my boys and I have no choice but to strike. Verizon is pushing to eliminate good middle-class jobs and make it impossible for someone like me to earn a decent living for my family in New York. You know, if you support working people and their right to stand up for a fair return on their work for themselves and all that who follow, tell Verizon to negotiate fairly. Let Isaac and his co-workers know that you have his back and their backs in this important fight. Take action now against corporate greed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it goes on to talk about, you know, their contract expired in August. In
yep.
months and months of effort to find common ground and requests for telecommunications giant to negotiate reasonably have failed. So now, as a last resort, they're walking out to hold the line for themselves and those that follow. They're not accepting Verizon's greed as the final word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and will you stand with them? I just want to, Verizon, even in this era of inequality and insane profitability, the company raked in $39 billion over the last 3 years
yep.
and $1.8 billion in profits each month so far in 2016.
And
yet, Verizon's executives are demanding life-changing concessions, ignoring hundreds of millions of dollars its employees have identified in savings. The company wants to contract out more work, offshore jobs, force technicians to leave their homes and families
like
for 2 months or more at a time to make people who have made Verizon one of the most successful companies do more with less.
Right, and apparently they're making 40 cents on every dollar when they use non-union workers, from what I'm gathering. And the CEO made $18.3 million in 2014. And in fact, all the executives have a surge of earnings, in which McAdams, most of his came from stock. So he's got a reason to keep the Stock's high.
Right. It's not right. I mean, they're trying to eliminate these guys. They're our neighbors. They're our friends. Mm-hmm. We know those people. You can go down there anytime right. during the day between, I believe it's 7 a.m. and 4 p.m.
Yeah,
and they're out on the line. You go out there, stand with them, tell them you support them, ask them what you can do. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe us, ask them. Why are they out? They're not out there. It's not for their benefit. Anybody who goes out on strike, they never go out on strike for themselves. They're going out on strike for the next generation. They're trying to save jobs for our children, your children, and mm-hmm. their children. And it's not any financial gain that they're going to make. They're trying to take away health care benefits from
us,
too.
Yes, they are, and retirement benefits as well. They want to cap it at 30 years, I believe, the retirement, to say that once you hit 30 years, you can't have any more retirement
socked away with
the company.
It's sad, but, you know, go out there and support them. If you can't stop the car, at least toot the horn when you go by. This is not the first time. It seems like every contract,
one
of the most profitable companies in the world, and they have to force their workers to go out on strike every time. They can't negotiate in good faith. There's not that mutual respect. It's not right.
Anyway, if you want, I was looking at an article under New Republic, and I'd like to go with the last two paragraphs of it. This was published about 2 days ago in the New Republic, and the last two paragraphs go, solidarity is no doubt important, but workers need more opportunities to fight back. The rise in strike isn't a sign of anything so much as desperation. As Verizon plays its large non-union workforce against their union brothers and sisters, in fact, corporations' ability to raise their leverage against workers goes hand in hand with the decline of the labor movement. It helps explain why wages have stagnated while corporate profits and executive salaries rise. Breaking the power of monopolistic corporations that harm consumers with higher prices and lower quality while harming workers with lower wages and benefits can help solve some of this inequality puzzle. Preventing trade deals, even in services like communications that allow jobs to move overseas, can also help. The main issue is that workers lose when they cannot band together. Technological change alone is not stirring these anxieties. It's that most people's wallets get lighter while a few others get fatter. Collective action can solve that power imbalance. That's what we're seeing at Verizon. But only 11% of the workforce is unionized. So basically, it goes on to consume that you do not have to be in a union in order to organize. It talks about McDonald's and the fight for 15 and how they successfully have had several organizing activities around that.
Yeah. 11% is probably the ones that do all the hard work.
And remember, that fight for 15, that didn't start that long ago. Was it
two summers ago?
We started doing this show, and one of the first shows was on the minimum wage, and we were quoting Ralph Nader. And at that time, we were just trying to get it up to $10 an hour. And since we started talking, I think that's what it is in Massachusetts.
It is finally $10 an hour.
And right now, there's legislation before the House of Representatives. Right. And what it would do is establish a living wage for employees of big box retail stores and fast food chains. The lead sponsor is Daniel Wolf. It's Senate Bill 1024 in the Massachusetts Senate, and Representative Steve Torino in the House 1773. That's the House number.
Right.
A state economy works best when all working people are able to meet their basic needs. Unfortunately, changes in our economy over the past three decades have made it difficult for working people to make ends meet. Since the 1970s, wage growth has stagnated, even though the economy continues growing. Today, a minimum wage worker in Massachusetts working full-time without taking any vacation will only earn $20,800 a year, making it difficult to build economic security and improve the living standard. So what they're asking, the basics, is to increase the minimum wage to $15 per hour, phased in over the next 3 years for workers in fast food and large retail establishments. Applies only to workers at fast food or big box retail businesses with 200 or more employees, for companies that operate through franchises or through subcontracting. All the employees count towards the 200 threshold. Defines fast food restaurants as locations with a limited menu, items prepared in advance, where customers order and pay for items before eating. Defines big box stores as retail businesses where merchandise is sold on site with a sales area of at least 25,000 square feet. You know, cool. So
they're actually closing a lot of the loopholes that the big box market and the franchises like to use by saying each store is individual.
Jobs with Justice, John Weissman in Western Mass Jobs with Justice set up a meeting with Gail Caridi at City Hall last Monday.
Yeah, I was going to pivot there and ask if you had a conversation with Gail on this.
And so there were, was it 15? Was there 15 of us in there?
There's at least 15.
At least 15, and we were asking for 15.
That's right.
It was educational because John did a good job of organizing the meeting. We had representatives from organized labor. We had the president of the Central Berkshire Labor Council was there. Mm-hmm. We had members from the Massachusetts Teachers Association, and we had members of the Massachusetts Nurses Association. I represented the National Association of Letter Carriers, April 4th Coalition. We had people for the Progressive Democrats. Mm-hmm. They were out of Lanesboro. Mike and Jack, John, you were there.
No.
You want to give your input as to, we had a few Williams College students there too.
Mm-hmm. Right, so do you guys feel that this meeting was successful?
I do. I think that Gail Caridi listened to what we had to say. She understands the arguments for 15 very mm-hmm. well. She understands why people are concerned that, you know, if you're making, you work in a place for 11 years or 15 years, and you're only making $11 an hour, if everybody goes up to 15, you go up to 15. In reality, all you're doing is holding the same. And the only reason it seems unfair, which it may be, is that if our representatives didn't allow those people, the 1%, to get greedy, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
No.
That they would have tied it, cost of living increase, to the minimum wage when they should have done it, mm-hmm. we wouldn't have this conversation. Mm-hmm. It would never have happened. But we allowed the people on top, they get so greedy, they kept all the money to themselves. So now we got to fight and do it. Does it fair sometimes? No, but the problem here, you got to realize that if it goes up to 15, even though you may realize that somebody who's only been there a couple of years is making the same as you, it's a benefit to the next generation. Whenever you fight for unions or worker rights, you're fighting for equality. That's what you're fighting for, folks. And sometimes you have to bite the bullet to get everybody to equal. And like I said, we wouldn't be having this happen if our politicians didn't allow the corporation to get so damn greedy. It's all about greed. When you fight with Verizon, I'm willing to bet you if you put in the stock options with the CEOs and the money that they do get, I read a good article in the newspaper a while back in the Boston Herald that the five CEOs on top of Verizon, and go back and look in the Boston Herald last week, were making between five of them over $200 million. That's
counting
everything.
A year.
So look inside the Boston Herald, folks. There's a small article in there about it. You'll find it. So therefore, if you figure out they can afford to pay the five CEO over $200 million a year,
they can afford
to pay their workers a decent wage. And all they're trying to do now is to break the union. If you're a Verizon customer and your quality of service goes down, you call them up on the phone 24 hours a day and demand good service. Mm-hmm. Because with the union workers, you're going to get it. With part-time workers and people that are going to piecemeal, sooner or later, you're not going to get the service. So fight for it now.
Now, that's good with Verizon, but back to the thing with Gail. Mm-hmm. She did come out and say that she was going to support this bill.
Right. She did?
She said she's going to support the bill for the $15 minimum wage. She made that commitment. We thank her for that.
Very much
Jack,
so.
did you have any
input? No, I just listened there. No, I didn't put anything in there, but... I was just listening when I went to that meeting.
And what were the highlights of the meeting that you thought?
They touched a lot of bases, like the fight for 15. And they touched some other bases here and there. I don't quite remember each one of them, though.
You think it was an effective way to talk to your legislator, having a group of people?
Person to person is better than sitting on an email thing or on a computer is face to face. That's the way things were done.
Right, communication is always better one-to-one. And do you think, would you advocate the people who have a cause should try to get in touch with the legislators one-on-one and do it.
Other
Power and numbers.
Right, and people, and you draw the alliance. And that's one of the effects, if I can diverge. I mean, Verizon's attacking this union, and it's a small percentage that are unionized.
Yeah.
But they're just an example of what's been happening since the 1970s. They've been attacking unions and attacking unions, but they think there'll be no consequences or repercussions. But there's always consequences and repercussions. And they're greedy and they're making a lot of money, but guess what? Finally, we start to get a voice. Mm-hmm. We got a guy running for president that's pushing for the fight for 15. His thing is minimum wage. And you know what? That guy's doing darn good. He was a nobody. Nobody knew him from Vermont. Uh-huh. No one listened to him. They wouldn't even put what he said on TV. Whatever Donald Trump would say would be on 10 times. Bernie Sanders wouldn't hear boo. Mm-hmm. But you know what? The people hear him and they understand. Mm-hmm. And so you want to attack unions one way, you're just going to make us stronger. You know, just be ready for that. You know, all these things that the elite and those people that are trying to, they only want one thing, and that's everything. And it's down to about 300 people worldwide that own more than half of the people worldwide. Mm-hmm. But eventually the people are going to organize and say, put some of that grub back on the table. We want to eat too. Mm-hmm. And you're just, you know, it's not going to go on like this forever. Every right that the workers ever got was because they organized, they fought, and they worked together to move together. And they worked hard. And everything that we got, whatever benefit the society gave, is because they knew they had to. Because the people organized and they were out on the streets. And we're not there yet, but we're getting darn close. We got a guy running for president that's getting a lot of votes. And all he's saying is, we want a middle class back. We want to represent the working class. Right. You know, we don't even want to be called the middle class. We'll be called the working class. The working class families, you know, working families. You know, we got a Working Families Party. They're endorsing Bernie Sanders over in New York State. Working families, that's all we're talking about. Too bad we got a lot of elected officials and people in power. They don't have families, or maybe they're dialing it in if they do have a family. But we have families, and we want those people represented.
We want the dream. We want to be able to bequeath to our children a better life than what we had ourselves. And that dream is definitely on the decline.
Right, right.
And Richard, remember one thing. You were talking about Mr. Trump getting all the news. You can make more news with hate than you can with peace. Mm-hmm. It's always been that way. If you got to wear hateful statements and something so ludicrous by giving everybody out there a nuclear bomb, you're going to make the news. If you go out there for the working man and doing the same for the people themselves, to them it's not newsworthy. Why? Because there's not no hate. There's hate, isn't there?
Right. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. If you want peace, if you want a peaceful world, you know, work for justice. Yeah. You know,
that's people. Cool. If you feed the people, you give them a job, you give them a future, you're going to have peace. When you take it away from the people, that's when you have, I think Jack made that statement quite a few times.
My father used to say, when people don't have enough food to feed themselves and stuff like that, you're going to see a side of people you wish you never saw.
Right.
Yep. Now, a lot of people seen that during the war. Yeah.
Can we shift gears a little bit to the hospital?
Would you like to go back there?
There's a couple of things, you know, about the hospital issue that are coming up. Of course, we still meet every Tuesday night at 5 o'clock at the American Legion. Thank you, American Legion, for making that building open to us. But we're planning on going to the city council meeting on April 26th at 7:30. And, you know, we're going to describe what we mean by we want a real hospital, make BMC North a real hospital. We're going to do it component by component. And the first component, because of the opioid addiction problem here in North Berkshire, in Massachusetts, in Berkshire County, in Massachusetts, and in the United States, it's one of the glaring issues. And we have a terrible problem here in North Berkshire. And we're going to go to the City Council and ask them to pass a resolution asking BMC and state officials to start taking care of the needs of the people here in North Berkshire who are trying to get treatment, who are seeking treatment for opioid addiction. We should have an opioid addiction treatment center right up here at the hospital. We used to have the Greylock Pavilion,
and
that space would be perfect to have 24-hour-a-day treatment center, and that's what we're going to be asking for. So, if you know, keep an eye out on Tuesday at 7:30. We're going to be going before the City Council, and we're going to be asking them to pass a resolution. And we're also going to bring people, not just from the North County Cares Coalition, but from the whole community that have been working on this issue of the opioid addiction.
Dick, would you like members of our audience to attend the meeting if they're able?
Yeah, that would be great. If they can make it, they have an interest in
it affects them one way or another.
It does. Support. It yeah. does. I we think all, everyone
we don't have to look too far. Everybody's been touched by this crisis, you know. Yeah.
I have.
And I just wanted to touch on one other thing in addition to that, and we can probably get a little bit more into it. But on the day before, on April 25th, we've been invited to Williams College at Hopkins Hall, room 001 at 7:30. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a guest speaker, Karain Hollerith, a Williams College professor, has invited Alicia McGregor of Princeton University. She's a postdoctoral research associate in the Center for Health and Well-Being at Princeton University. And she's coming to talk to Professor Hollerith's class at Williams, but she wants to talk to the people in North County because we've experienced a hospital closure, because she's starting to research hospital closings in New Jersey, and she will discuss the impact of hospital closures to the surrounding population, you know, how it affects the population by class, race, and other factors.
Wow.
So she's interested in hearing our story too. We're sending her some information, but she's going to talk for a little bit, and then we're going to have a little give and take. So the public is invited to that. It's at 7 p.m. at Williams College on April 25th, that's next Monday, at 7 p.m. at Hopkins Hall.
Didn't you say 7:30?
7:30 is the city council meeting. Meeting is at 7 p.m. Yeah. on the 25th at Williams College.
Okay.
And I just wanted to let you know, because this is a nationwide problem, but it's affecting us. And both the discussion that we're going to have at Williams College and at the city council speak to the issue that Mr. Ramos, what was his first name?
Ferdinand, right?
No,
Ferdinand?
I'm not sure. Mr. Ramos from Healthcare for All, when he spoke, he said healthcare is a basic human right. It's defined by in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
Right.
I think it's Article 25. 24. I think it's 24 or 25. But he says it's also been researched by the United Nations, and they also came up with some documents saying not only is healthcare your basic human right, but it is your basic human right to participate in the discussion in defining what type of healthcare your community needs. That you have the right, it's our basic human right to be part of the solution to figure out what healthcare is needed in your community. Not just take it or leave it type of thing. That we as a community should be able to define what kind of healthcare should be distributed in our community.
Well, I think it's been a proven fact by all the studies that have been done, and some of them were paid for by BMC and BHS, that there is a need for a hospital in North Adams. It said that in all the reports. And the only thing criteria was, then they talked about the money. But the problem here is if there's a need, that goes above greed. And plain and simple, we shouldn't have to wait till somebody dies in North Adams or there's a tragic accident and people die and say, we should get a hospital. That's happened back in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. People died. We don't need it. You can have a hospital up and running, and BMC and BHS should still make money. The only thing they don't want to do is give up the jobs they stole and took in Pittsfield. That's the reason why, folks. They got the jobs in Pittsfield, they're making all that profit, and they don't want to give them up.
Profit? So what do you mean? They don't make profit. They have a surplus, but it's not profit, right?
Well, let me put it this way. If you're making money above your needs, you got a profit. You can call yourself a non-profit, but if you don't put it back into the community,
right.
As they said, that they represent the community, they're a profit. I know it's nice to be a non-profit, but if it's a non-profit, we have a hospital up here by now.
Right.
So all I can say is, you got $42 million? Come on, give some.
$42 million
give some up here.
Surplus for the
that.
Two hospitals. Plus, they're able to pay their executives quite well.
Yes, well,
they're paying their people good money. There's no excuse why you can't have a hospital. Every report says we need one. That's the catch. And a nonprofit is supposed to be for the need, for the good of the community, and for the needs of the community. BHS and BMC have not done it. Maybe about time for the Attorney General to go look at the nonprofits and say, hey, maybe now you're not a nonprofit. Because
yeah.
they still haven't risen up to the standard.
And you can't just take over a hospital and then not open it. If you're going to take it over, you should open it.
Yeah.
You can't just take it over so you can't get any competition. If you have a monopoly of care in Berkshire County, you can't just buy that hospital and not open it up. You should have opened it up.
Yep. And they're going to use a fear.
Should have done more, yes.
They're using a fear factor, too.
Mm-hmm.
If
right,
you're complaining, you don't do anything, by God, we're not going to give you anything more. Mm-hmm. And once again, it's a scare tactic by the people who have the money, have the power, and we shouldn't be helpless. We should not be helpless. I'm telling people, go out there and look up the nonprofit statute, see what it says, and see if BMC and BHS is abiding by it.
And
maybe it's about time that people should really look into it, because I'm going to tell you something. The first page says it all, for the good of the community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you something, folks. If you look around, they're not doing their job.
Well, a lot of times I hear that they don't want to risk opening this hospital up, so they'll end up closing theirs.
No, that's a bunch of bull. You know, that's a bunch of bull. That's all it is, too. It's a bunch of people talking when it's been a proven fact that hospital made money, and if they didn't take the money and invest it into a gamble, which is what they did, they gambled our money, they gambled the hospital. They lost it, but we didn't lose it because it wasn't making money. And I'm telling you, if BMC, BHS opens it up, within 4 years, they're going to be making a profit up here. I know that they're not going to have it all down in BMC, where it really looks good for David Phelps, because we get it back
to
North
Yeah, but all the money
Adams.
Goes into one pot, doesn't it? It doesn't matter if we're North County
well,
or
good.
South County
then
or South County
anymore. Well, good. We're
supposed
to put
it
up
into
here.
One pot, so it ought to be
some
bag around the pot.
Let's
call it here.
You know, I mean, and to be honest, we're not asking for a BMC up here. We're asking for the size of a hospital that Fairview
yep.
has.
No,
basically, you know, and Fairview operates as a satellite hospital. Right. You know, anything they can't handle gets shipped to BMC. It's no reason why I can't operate up here this way, that we have a satellite one, and then whatever can't be handled up here goes.
So this is going to make the argument they don't have the money to do it. If you open up the hospital up here, BMC is not going to close, it's still going to be open.
No,
the problem here is that some doctors may have to come up here and practice, which then again, it's supposed to be for your health.
Right.
So I'm sure that the doctors, when they took the oath.
Yeah, but the doctors would come up and practice
yeah, they
if
would
there
have
was
to.
A hospital.
If there's a good quality hospital, we don't want a 100-bed hospital.
No.
We want a small hospital just like they have in South
County.
1522
beds, folks.
32, I think.
Well, that's
we want the
everything.
Dozen for the mental
that's
health,
right.
mental health,
for the
addiction, and
20
for the,
20 regular.
In for the medical surge.
15 and 22
and
for the regular.
And,
that's right.
And maybe a maternity ward.
Well, can I give you a quote for the day? This one,
sure.
I always go
you
on
here.
What is this?
I go for the thought for the day. This one's from Mark Twain. The best way to cheer yourself up is to try to cheer someone else up. It says, often when a low mood is coming on, sometimes it's because the mind has started to brood on itself and the things that formerly seemed exciting now elicit no response. In a sense, we have closed down. A friend can talk to us and we might not hear him. We can go to the movies and not follow the plot. We are utterly absorbed in a hall of mirrors inside in which we and everyone around us are pushed and pulled. So it says in doing things, try to help somebody else out. Get out there and work
Thank
for the
you.
Hospital.
Those are the people. There you go.
With workers' blood, spikes of the buses we must fight for. From the cities and the farmlands to trenches full of mud, war has always been the buses' wiser. The Union forever defending our rights. Now with the black leg, the workers unite with our brothers and our sisters. Any bar of land, there is power in a union. Now I long for the morning that I realize brutality and unjust laws cannot defeat us. But who'll defend the workers who cannot organize? And the bosses send their lackeys out.